Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Data Podcast. I don't know about you, Andy, but this week I'd much rather be sat in a pub beer garden because it's absolutely roasting in my office. And I think I've messed up.
Keep going.
It's the first time I've messed up an intro. I probably had one too many beers in the heat. Yeah. Anyway, how are you, Andy?
I would say, at the beginning of the week, I'd say the same. I've had some time off, given it's half term with the kids, and I'm wishing I was back at work now, through to constant earache. And I think the heat has sent them into a frenzy as well. So they're sort of running in and out of the house, in and out of the paddling pool, covered in ice cream, sort of wears a bit thin after about the eighth time. But at least it's nice that we're not getting rain anymore, and the summer feels like it's finally here. But there's been no let up really in this sort of world of data stories. I see that the CDO summer school is gearing up for its next iteration, many people we both know are getting ready to attend that next version. There's more and more going on as always, and we welcome yet another new guest with us tonight. So I'd like to welcome Gareth Parks with us tonight, who works for Sir Robert McAlpine. Gareth, good evening.
Good evening. Hi, Andy. Hi, Nick.
How are we doing tonight?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well.
Good.
So listening to your stories about running in and out of paddling pools is, it's been a very similar story here this afternoon. Although we've got a 6 week old, so the noises in the background, then that's what we're dealing with at the moment. But all good.
Good. And Gareth, tell us a bit about yourself, because I noticed, and we'll come on to this in terms of how we've shared emails and stuff, but you officially don't put your job title on your emails, I've seen, and I've seen different versions of your day job, if you like, in Sir Robert McAlpine. So tell us a bit more about what is a day in the life like?
Sure. Well, so my official title is Head of Data and Analytics at Sir Robert McAlpine. And I think there are various different signatures, some of which include that. But I've only really been in this role officially for not even 9 months. Prior to that, there's been a lot of sort of work behind the scenes to really advance the sort of the data journey that we've been going on at Sir Robert McAlpine. So I spend, I guess, a lot of my days both internally and externally with suppliers and clients and others across the sector. I probably see myself as much as anything as just evangelizing as the opportunities that exist within data and analytics, and then as much as possible trying to help the business to take some steps forward on its journey.
Cool. I can imagine within the sector of sort of construction, real estate, etc., that is no easy task, given that where they've come from as a sector, they're still very much on that journey from, and I can say this having spent some time in the sector, but paper-based, lots of different stakeholders and players all sort of owning their bit of the information puzzle, if you like. How are you seeing that sort of both evolve within Sir Robert McAlpine, but also within the sector itself?
So, I mean, I think that's in some ways a generous sort of categorization. So McKinsey put, I think, construction as a sector way down at the bottom of its list of all of these sort of technologically advanced sectors. But I think we vie for that last position with agriculture, hunting and farming or something.
Oh wow. Okay.
So there's and So there's a long way that we've got to go on a digital transformation journey as a sector, and then also related to that, recognizing the opportunities and making exploiting those opportunities with data. So there's a lot to do.
And I'm intrigued as to how for you as a company, you're both a client and a contractor, I think, is that right, for Sir Robert McAlpine in construction projects?
So we're what's known as a tier one contractor, sort of main contractor. As a business we typically focus on a small number of large, very complex projects, within that we are often we subcontract out a lot of the work that we're doing, and working for a number of clients across the sector, tend to be developers. We also have our own sort of development part of the business, as well as a whole range of related things that we're involved in, including a sister organization called RES, Renewable Energy Systems, which is the largest independently owned renewable company in the world. There's a lot going on within the group.
I'm always interested in the sort of mix between internally Sir Robert McAlpine getting their head around use of data and how do you do that better, versus one of the things I'm seeing interestingly evolve is how then you, I guess, adopt technologies and adopt ways of working around data to make that better outputs for your clients. And obviously sometimes they are the same, sometimes they're intrinsically linked, sometimes they're very, very separate.
The obvious example of that is BIM, building information modeling and management, and which is very much the 3D imagery and the use of models of buildings, and then connecting the various different data sets to that and making use of those digital assets digital twins is the term that's used, and the sort of direction that everybody's heading in. And so there's, I'd say, the just focusing on that for a moment, the sectors, there are parts of the sector that are really sort of bought into it and pushing that hard. There are others that just haven't really got started yet. And I think that can be a challenge for everyone involved. Government mandates around level two of the BIM framework that they've established, which is doing moving things forward, but as with all of these things, it can take time. And then you flip over to the other side, which is, I guess, really where this kind of my journey started, was the data surrounding the delivery of the asset. So the BIM model or the digital twin of a building is something that you typically be in a position to pass across to the client, so that they've then got a 3D replica of, and a digital replica of the building that they've built or that we've built for them. But then there's all of these other data sets and pieces of the puzzle, schedules, risk registers, all of the sort of task lists for all of the different things that are used in order to get the job done and to get the building built or the infrastructure built. And that has lagged behind even the push that has been going on within the construction sector. And so for the headlines there, which just always blow my mind, is that if you look at major projects, then globally, these major projects, only one in 200 of them is delivered on time, on budget, and inside the planned benefits envelope. So they've only one in 200 is doing what we'd set out to do at the beginning. Now that's not just purely across construction, that's across all of sort of project management, project delivery on these significant infrastructure projects. But it's that's just crazy that and just demonstrates why we sit at the bottom of that McKinsey league table.
And do you find that being in a sector that is that has got a long way to go, that other organisations in that sector are willing to collaborate for the overall good of the sector and start to push things forward together? Or are people kind of taking a lone wolf type of approach to it?
I think there's, as is probably the case with most sectors, there's a bit of both there, Nick. We've certainly taken the approach with all of the sort of data activities that we've been doing, is that this, we're still very much in the foothills, and actually what's going to be beneficial in the long run for us is to collaborate and to learn from others and really sort of establish as broad an ecosystem as possible of like-minded individuals and organizations that are able to help each other through this, rather than setting off all on our own and then looking back over our shoulders and seeing that we've completely isolated and no one's come with us. There's definitely bits of both, and one of the things that we've been pushing for a couple of years now is this concept of a data trust, which comes from various different sort of papers and things that have been published on the topic, namely coming from the Open Data Institute and the work that they've been doing about development of data institutions fundamentally, which is, I think, just a huge space that's that not enough people have really got their head around, and actually there's a big opportunity for us as a construction sector to use something like that, use one of these fairly advanced mechanisms to find better ways to collaborate at a really granular data level, and then fast track our development through that kind of mechanism.
Because I've always found, Gareth, that construction is a bit of a weird one, and I guess it comes partly from the immaturity, if you like, of some of these. It's very traditional. It's probably a better description and a fairer description. In the, it's the way things have always been done. Why change it? And I can say that as my old man is from that world. But the breadth of organizational size, organizational complexity. You talk about for Robert McAlpine, the tier one client and supplier. But the vast array of subcontractors that you will utilize to do probably less in your space on the sort of monster jobs. But you've got everybody from a five man organization that does plumbing through to an electrical outfitters that is a massive organization. And the ability to pull that data together or pull it together in such a way that benefits the overall program and then the end client has always struck me as like, well, how do you get over that? Because that is such an enormous task to change an entire industry. It is not something that's going to happen overnight or with one organization taking the lead, right?
Yeah, I mean, completely. There are thousands and thousands of construction companies of yeah, as you say, from the very small all the way up to the sort of those that are employing thousands of people. And it is the case that depending on the geography, and this is purely thinking about the UK, which is where we tend to operate, but it's equally applicable abroad as well, is that depending on the geography, the type of project that it is, whether or not it's an office building or a hospital or a school, the length of contract, in some cases the weather, there's all of these different factors that that come to play as to who it is that you're going to have in your wider project team across delivering one project. And of course you deliver that one project and then it's almost inevitable that when you move on to the next project, you've got a completely different team of people and a completely different ecosystem that's established for delivering that next project. So leveraging the learning from any one of these projects to feed into the next one is incredibly complicated, as you say.
Yes. And on a number of these podcasts that we've talked to, people like yourself that are sort of in industry expert and I guess a subject matter expert from an industry point of view versus sort of technical experts. And again, and I won't name names here, but I've seen several tenders and RFPs from end clients. So not people like yourself, but say government departments, primarily focusing on a capital program or a construction program. And they ask for support or capability around data use to be able to do everything from, I don't know, reporting to modeling and anything in between. I've never ceased to be amazed by their lack of technical understanding of what actually is required to build out data capabilities. So, they will refer to in the same breath, and a number of people will wince at this, but also say, well, technically this is right. We want a database or a data lake, but then quote Excel as the tool of choice. And you're sort of like, well, where do I go with that? Because I've got to first of all persuade, or I guess influence them to make them understand that Excel can't really do that, especially on the scale that they're talking about. Then their next default is, well, just do it in Power BI. Other visualization tools are available, but again, they're sort of thinking just their awareness, I guess, and interested in terms of whether you're coming across the same challenges, the same problems, and how you're getting over that. Because it does seem to be an understanding gap. And it's through no fault of their own. They're not data experts, but they're expecting a lot from the wrong tools, I guess.
I can completely relate and see that kind of challenge on a regular basis. I think this is something that I've been reflecting on a little bit recently, actually, is that as with so many things, when it comes to the sort of the technical side of things, it's still very often lumped in with IT.
Yes.
Whereas I would see data as being something completely different. There's a nice analogy that someone came up with of IT is like your bucket and data is like the water that you've got in that bucket. They're just so completely different. And then you can use buckets for certain things, but actually water has all of these just myriad different uses depending on what it is that you're trying to do with it. So I think there's definitely a sort of a hurdle there to get people over, but actually The flip side of that is, I'm not, and this particularly applies to the sort of project data analytics space, but the case for what we're doing with these things and how we are able to effectively make best use of this data, I think is still there's still elements of trust and leaps of faith and a need to for people to sort of see it, to believe it, and the sort of data professionals are almost akin to magicians in some of the things that they're able to do. And I think there's definitely more to be said for really articulating the benefits of benefits to businesses as to what they're getting for some of these things, and then using that to justify the technical infrastructure and everything else that's required around it, which certainly from my mind starts with quite simply our sort of ability to make decisions using data, or facts, just simple facts. Let's base our decisions on the facts rather than on the gut and on the experiences that we've held previously. Because so many of those experiences are that with the pace of change and society, etc., so many of those experiences absolutely have their place, but there's all these other things that need to be considered as well. And that is a that's a real minefield for an industry that is, as you say, very traditional, very much based on sort of the handing down of knowledge from master to apprentice, and yeah, knowledge travels from person to person like that, rather than any other way. And that's before then you start getting into the really sort of big opportunities around just use of things like robotic processing, or the real kind of opportunities when you do start to collaborate at a project level, and you have everyone from a project team all working from the same data set, all able to sort of make real-time decisions, able to develop the size and the scale of data sets that you're then able to really start to leverage with some of the really clever things, and clever applications. And I think there's such a long way that construction needs to go in order to really start to understand, what we're using this for, and then for us to use that as the justification for the architecture, infrastructure, etc., that's required.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point that you made a few moments ago around data not necessarily being an IT thing or an IT
Yes.
function, and it's a common thing, and we see in most organizations it's different. Some organizations it clearly sits in IT and it's an IT CIO responsibility. Other organizations it sits within the business. Just curious to see where does data sit in your organization, and has that changed or evolved, or has it always been in the same place?
So it's, I mean, it's definitely evolved, and I think one of the challenges is then both for data and IT teams is to know where it sits, and then know what's important to be migrating, and how to be migrating some of those things, so that they can be more easily leveraged for other activities in the future. And I don't think it's atypical for individual. In fact, thinking about it, and if I pick on learning legacies of things like the Olympics 2012, Crossrail, potentially something like HS2. Where does all of that project data, all of the delivery data, sit for each of these massive, massive public works, so that the industry is able to make best use of learning from them? I think all of these sort of mega projects are touted as having a fantastic legacy to be able to pass on to others. But really, the way that people learn is you've had to have been on one of those projects to understand what happened and what didn't happen, and the way that things worked and didn't work. And only then are you able to start to apply some of the learning from those jobs, rather than being able to get to the data set to be able to say, and completely appreciate that data probably has to be anonymized and pseudonymized, and various other things need to happen to it in order to sort of protect individuals and protect IP, etc. But there's such a huge amount of it that is not contentious in any way, and actually would be far better shared across a broader industry. And I think that concept and that principle is something that scales from any inside any organization, any project delivery organization, whereby you've got individual projects that are sort of islands in their own right, all the way up to the way that the sector is operating in conjunction with other project delivery sectors.
And Gareth, you mentioned about that as an example of where those mega projects, they talk about a legacy, but in reality it doesn't always follow. And prior to that, you mentioned about the business case or the value statement that still sometimes needs a bit of a leap of faith. And I think you're bob on, and it's not it's not just construction, I think, that suffers from that. But I've seen and heard examples where people just don't understand the value of it because, well, we've got a team of people that do that. I don't know, like project management reporting, for example. And because of the need to invest in the infrastructure, often from a pure financial point of view, far outweighs the X number of heads you might be able to get rid of to stop doing that because you can automate it. Have you got any like real experience or any sort of war stories of either proof of concepts or aspects of the work you've done that you found to particularly light people up and go, that's it, that's the thing that I didn't understand or I didn't know, or if only I'd seen that 12 months before, that got them to go, yeah, we need to now motor on this and get cracking?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things, variations on a theme really. So one is, some of the work that we've been doing through hackathons that we've been involved in, which is one of, if not the sort of first kind of dipping our toe in the waters of making better use of our data. And one of the big challenges that we faced is, so in fact, it was there's a hackathon going on today and tomorrow, which is the 9th. Go all the way back 2-3 years ago to the 2nd. And there was a dashboard that was created that we'd put forward the challenge. We'd said, here's the dashboard that we've got internally. Here's a data set that sits behind it. Beat our dashboard, build something better. Over the course of 24 hours, lo and behold, a much more insightful view of the world appeared before our eyes. And we were seeing things from that data set that hadn't even realized was in there, kind of thing. But then trying to find the right sort of champion with the right level of understanding inside the business to be able to pick that up and say, you know what, yes, that's exactly what we need, and that's exactly what we want to push through. When there are so many different things that are sort of being competed for in terms of their time and their resources, and then the historically sort of tight margins that are operated under within the sector. So it becomes very, very sort of challenging to get people to say, you know what, yes, that's something that I'm going to, as a leader, that's something that I'm going to get behind and I'm going to see through and make happen. And those absolutely need to come from business users, in my perspective. And I think that's something that it was a very early lesson that we learned, was that you need those champions to be able to pick these things up. Equally, you also need the skills inside the business to be able to really articulate how this could, whilst it's still a rough around the edges proof of concept that was developed over the course of 24 hours, how actually this could be polished relatively easily and turned into something that's fantastic.
Well, that was going to be my next question, and interested to hear Nick's experiences here, because I think it's probably more similar or closer to sort of some of the examples that you experience in convincing those people or explaining to those people, we've got a bunch of techies have knocked something together over a weekend. It is not a case of click your fingers and that is now production ready. And you're back to the, well, why can't we just make that real? Because you did it in a weekend and you've got everything from security to that data set was, a download. So we could work on it in a hack environment versus streamed or accessed via whatever ingestion methods you might choose, and so on and so on. And the sort of technical list. And that's why I was interested in your comment on the separation between data and technology, how just hearing sort of Nick's reflection on that, it's not just your industry, that there's another, there's many of our clients particularly where that separation is both a blessing and a curse, because of who you need to help you make it all come together. And so, Nick, I'm sure you experience more of this than I do in terms of how do you move those things from a demo or a POC into reality, and that investment input can be orders of magnitude bigger when you move from a couple of people knocking something together in their spare time over a handful of days through to production grade operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good question, and I think the most important part is to pick a POC that has a clear route to a return on investment, because not only will it get the business excited about what you're doing, but it will help to pave the way for that future investment, like you say. But then there's other challenges. So, often these POCs are on a data scientist's laptop, and like you say, with ad hoc downloaded data and all that kind of stuff. As soon as you then go to IT and say, we need this new platform, these new databases. You get all the kind of pushback of typical IT departments. And that's when I think you use the buy-in that you've gained from the business and the return on investment to build out your business case to IT. And I think the more people you can get excited and shouting about something, the easier that conversation becomes, because it's not just you asking for it, it's everyone asking for it. I don't know about you, Gareth, but I think having some champions who can shout the same tune that you're singing just makes it a lot easier.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, as much as anything, just helps keep you sane, because there are other people that you can talk to that are speaking the same language. And that's something that we focused on. And one of those very early learnings from these hackathons and everything that we were trying to do there was that without the the capability and the understanding and those champions inside the business, it was going to be very difficult to progress anything. And so that's something that we spent a lot of time, and I still do, which I just think is so, so valuable, is investing in other people and their skills and their understanding of what they can do with data, and just making them feel as if actually it's something that's worth pursuing, and not to give up at that first hurdle when be it from the business or from IT, they get a sort of a shrug of the shoulders or we're too busy to talk about this kind of thing. I'd say that another big challenge is the intensity of delivering projects mean that you have to catch the right project team at the right time, in order to get them to sort of pick up and then test a proof of concept, and go through that whole sort of UAT process, because it's very often the case that you'll have lots and lots of enthusiasm, but then that will dissipate with one person changing from one project to another, or a new package of work starting up, and all of a sudden everything changes. And I think that's not only a challenge from a sort of data perspective, it's also a challenge from a digital perspective. How do you make sure that you're introducing these new products, be they data or technology, whatever it might be, how do you make sure that you're landing it in the right way, at the right time, on the right project? And that's something that I've not come across anyone that's really properly cracked that as yet.
Yeah, it's a similar problem to what we're seeing is, we could go away and we could get the infrastructure, the data, we could build the products, train the models, but actually, if you've not got the people on the ground able, willing, and with enough time to execute on the back of those, then you've almost done all of that for nothing. So it's a sense of timing as well, to make sure that when you're delivering at the time when people can make use of those things. And it's a challenge that I think most people overlook, because they think it's all about building the models and building the products, but you've got to nail that as well. Otherwise, you won't hit your return on investment or your benefits that you've expected.
Exactly, and then you end up in this vicious circle of sort of over promising and under delivering through no fault of the actual product itself. It's as with so many things, it's people and it's behavior change that is the real challenge.
So I find that interesting that both of you have picked on that, because I wouldn't disagree at all that you could have, and we talk a lot about the shiny, but unless anybody's going to use it or make a decision off it or change what they were doing yesterday, based on now they can see a fact and evidence, it's all a waste of money, or it's all a waste of time, or both. But one of the things I've really noticed in the last sort of 6 to 12 months is there's no shortage of ideas of what the product, and I use that term broadly, should do or should look like or should be capable of. It's a bit back to, and I might this might be a biased view given where I come at it from, but it's then the behind the scenes, the engineering and the infrastructure that is required to get that is such a gap in terms of people's understanding of what's really needed and how you do it. So real example is how you move from databases that might have just overwritten or never capture things as a proper time machine, if you like, and they want to be able to pull reports that can tell you what happened on the 1st of January. not realizing that historically a lot of databases just wouldn't allow you to do that because it overwrites, or you know, when you update it, it doesn't always capture everything. And the need to build that typically, I guess, a cloud-based environment that keeps every iteration of every bit of data is just miles away from what they expect and understand is needed. It's like, well, why can't you just make that happen? It's like, it doesn't work like that. And that's been one of the big eye-openers for me. But I can build it in Excel. And it's like, but you can't, because if somebody updates that in Excel, you haven't got the history of what happened before it. And I don't know whether it's probably a question to both of you, really, in the roles that you perform. But for me, in construction, Gareth, I've never been short of people coming up with ideas and getting excited about what's the art of the possible with data. It's just, just an experience of technical delivery and technical from a technology point of view. They're clearly technical in their role. But just an understanding of that technology, going back to the question of where does technology versus data sit, is quite a big gap, actually, I'm seeing.
I think you're absolutely right in that there is a big disconnect. And I think partly that is due to the in a sector that's there to deliver projects. I mean, many of these contracting organizations are going to have extremely small, lean IT functions that are there to perform a function, and in some cases it's making sure that there's laptops and Wi-Fi and very sort of tangible kit that are on people's desks for them to do their work. And I think there's a real kind of leap then, and a sort of chasm almost between the requirements that business users have or the ideas that business users have, and then being able to translate that into the practicalities and the technicalities of actually being able to deliver something. I think this is an area where we're actually quite lucky in that we've got, and I certainly feel lucky in that I've got an experienced development team with inside the organization who have been extremely patient and extremely challenging in terms of the way that we can go on our journey. And the things that we need to do together, but we've been able to sort of bring it to a point that we've got input from people from a data perspective, from the IT or sort of development cycle perspective, and also from the business, and that sort of melting pot and that collaboration really is I think something that's critical to really being able to make some of these things work technically and land then properly within the business.
Mm. And do you, this might be a controversial question, but do you get the sense that you as a business are sort of at the forefront of this from an industry point of view, or, you know, are there, in your view, are there, you know, really, really, really good examples out there within construction that are, yeah, you're sort of looking up to, or is there a real mix? Because it's like you said at the start, it's such a vast industry in terms of the different players and capabilities. I'm just intrigued as to whether Sir Robert McElwain are positioning, you know, are you positioning yourself to be at the vanguard of this, or have you not got that far in your thinking yet?
So, I mean, I think we've been talking about project data analytics and slowly but surely finding others coming out of the woodwork over the last probably 9 months. Some of those are have been doing some fantastic work, and so there are some fantastic examples and organizations that are much further along on their journey than we are in terms of they've headed off up into the hills kind of thing and are delivering AI solutions and various other sort of very clever advanced data products. But the vast majority of conversations that I have are with people that have not really even got their head around it yet. So a typical response would be, turning around and sort of saying, and I've gone out looking for, and we've now built a group of data leaders across different organizations. And we're up to about 15, 20 of us that have a lead for data across the built environment. But often responses that I'd get back to sort of the initial emails about that would be, well, we don't have anybody that's dedicated to looking at or thinking about data, or we're just getting started thinking about this. Is that okay, kind of thing? And so I don't think SRM is absolutely at the forefront from a technological point of view, but I think when it comes to demonstrating leadership and following through on our belief that actually we can't do this alone, this is absolutely something that the construction sector has to do together, then we're leading the field from that regard.
Good. It's not nice to hear. I think there's I guess I'm just seeing such a range from end user clients understanding of what the value is to them and being able to see, I don't know, trend analysis through projects over time, or being able to spot projects that are going to fail before they fail, which is obviously a bit of the holy grail in this sort of space, given your opening statement on 1 in 200, through to consultancies and contractors that want to be able to actually provide part of that data analysis as a service to you as an end client, for example. It's quite a fascinating area, and especially given the traditions of the sector, I think there's both a long way to go, but there's also a huge opportunity, in my view.
I completely agree. It's a massive opportunity and a very long journey and I think the approach that has been taken sort of historically from a technology point of view, more so from a data point of view, just simply because of sort of maturity, has been almost a one size fits all. And so there's lots of healthy, in some cases unhealthy, skepticism about what's possible and how realistic some of those things are. And I think that's absolutely a challenge for all of the data leaders in the sector to bridge that gap. Reflecting on just this conversation, actually, and I don't know if this is your perspective as well, Nick, from where you sit, but not only is there that big gap from an IT and business perspective, but also it seems as if there are these gaps wherever you look, almost to try and move forward with a data project. Business and data and IT, IT and business, it's lots of disparate sort of people trying to do the right thing, often in splendid isolation. I guess from construction, that reflects the nature of the sector and the way that the sector is set up, as we talked about earlier. But yeah, what is that something that you see, Nick?
Yeah, definitely. Because we're a global organization, we've got a very regional business model. You often find that different different regions are have bigger gaps, some have smaller gaps, some are more advanced, and there's always a different approach that they take. And I think the same with the whole of the supply chain industry. Some of our customers are completely leading the way with data and digital. And then others are quite far behind in the fact that they're quite old school in the way that they work, and they've got a lot of space to make up for. So, you know, listening to the way you kind of describe the construction industry, it there's a lot of kind of similarities between supply chain and logistics, especially around the collaboration point. And it's something that I think more sectors should start to do is, you know, collaborate and share some of that data for the good of the sector, rather than hoarding it for yourself to generate your own value.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's exactly where then things like data trusts and other data institutions, data exchanges, really start to come into their own, because it provides that independence. It is almost akin to things like professional bodies 100 years ago that would be the sort of the respected independent location. So you'd go to the Royal Engineering Institute, or all of these, what's it called, Royal Engineering Society, and all of these sort of learned bodies that that comprise of the great and the good that are working together to advance their particular sector out into the great unknown. And I think it's almost as if we need more of that kind of that kind of institution to you go into all sorts of sort of philosophical and societal sort of challenges, and how this sort of thing is it has the potential to solve some of these. But a really practical example of something that that seems to be working very well is the aviation industry, where everybody in the sector is signed up to sharing operational data, and because the industry is so, they recognize how so networked and connected they all are, that actually if you're not sharing that operational data, then you're having a knock-on effect to lots and lots of other companies and ultimately lots and lots of other customers.
Let's go back and Gareth, you were talking about the idea of data trusts, and being able to move the sector on because of the consequences of things like the supply chain and who owns what data, and you alluded to the Royal Institute of Engineers, or apologies for those who involved if I got that wrong, but I think bodies like that, or RICS, so the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, I think it is. Some of those sort of taking the lead on this and trying to drive that agenda, I don't know what you think, but that could be a great route for pushing this on from a professional body perspective as well as just in company.
So I think, I mean, there's a couple of things here. There's one, that these sort of silos and these pockets exist at not even at a project level, but inside projects and the organizations working on a project, then at project level, then across an organization, and then across the wider sector and supply chain. And it seems to me that, in days gone by, the role of a Royal Academy of Engineering or RICS or one of these sort of learned bodies would be to pull everybody together to move things forward. And I think, something like a data institution is whilst it's a long way from that from a technical perspective, there's lots and lots of sort of philosophical sort of synergies that exist there. And I think it's that coming together of the industry that's going to have to happen. The consolidation of some of these incredibly sort of long drawn out supply chains and subcontract chains. And it's that use of some of these sort of democratized data outputs and the sharing of data. In many cases, the things that people are doing are the challenging bit isn't the technical side of things, it's the adoption of it. So actually, why don't we start to collaborate more when it comes to the technical side of things, and be able to point more resource then inside our own organizations at the challenges of adoption and the challenges of really making use of the tools that we are all confident that we can create.
Yeah, I think there's a number of sectors that I reckon are in a similar position that need a bit of guide rails almost from either their professional bodies or similar that can act as that, that point of reference for that, for an entire sector or an entire industry. I think people like the ODI are starting to part fill that gap. So things like their learning matrix and data literacy work, I think, you know, many industries would do well by using that as a starting point at the very least. But I think for industries such as construction, which is just vast, having those sort of guide rails, and they're never going to be like hard and fast rules just because of the differences within subsectors and individual clients and stuff. But something that can help progress things, I think is a great idea and a great step forward. As I said, Gareth, this is a sector and an area that is vast, and I think we've barely scratched the surface tonight. And could go on and on. I know you're actively involved in other organizations and bodies and groups and all kinds of stuff to help grow the awareness and push this within the sector. So it may be that we have to get you back on to do an episode two or a chapter two on this, because I feel like as a sector, it's just growing and growing, and at a pace. You know, every week I'm seeing new stuff come out around construction and project data analytics and the evolution. So it's been a pleasure having you tonight. There's so much to go at. We typically roll up our episodes with three questions that we ask to all of our guests. Sometimes we give them a bit of pre-warning and sometimes we don't. So we're dropping this on you with a bit of surprise. And hopefully they won't be too tricky. But I'll kick off with the first one and then I'll hand over to Nick. So if you could go back in time and meet your 20-year-old self, what would you wish you could tell them that you think would help your data career now?
If I were to tell my 20-year-old self, I would tell them to find a data and analytics apprenticeship and get on that. That's what I tell myself. Quite simply, those skills are going to be absolutely invaluable going forward.
I like that. That's a very good one. That's the first time I've heard somebody offer that. So anybody who's listening that's I know some of these things are already gaining traction, but a data apprenticeship in business or in sector could be a great one. So
for me, this is something that's so underutilized as a fantastic mechanism that's just not being used. And there's this real stigma around apprentices and seen as something for young people and just starting out on their careers. For us, we're really keen to make best use of the apprenticeship levy. Businesses have to pay into a pot to fund these apprenticeships anyway. So go out there and make use of it. If I were to join it at 20 years old, then I'd be dragging down the average age of our SIM apprentices a long way.
Yes, it's a really good point on the apprenticeship levy. A lot of organisations can pretty much pay for their apprenticeships using that, and it's just money that often just sits there not being used. Great shout there. The next question is around what training, learning, or course would you recommend anyone joining the data profession? And I've got a feeling it might be the same answer.
Yes, it would be. I think what I would say to expand on it is that there are so many freely available courses out there from lots and lots of online platforms. So if you're not confident or comfortable committing to something as substantial as an apprenticeship, then just get online to and start looking for some of these various different, be it Coursera or many other sort of courses that are available from edX and all of these online universities, etc. And start dipping your toe in something that seems interesting.
Good idea. As you say, there's tons out there. It's getting started rather than spending too much time choosing. I don't think there's any perfect answer, or there's not many that are particularly better than the others, but getting going on something is better than not getting started at all, I think. So our last question tonight, Gareth. So if you could sit down with anyone in data, dead or alive, this is, to chat during an episode of the Data Podcast, who would you want to meet? And we've had some very tenuous links previously, so this can be as random or as off center as you like.
I think so. Where I would go, who I'd love to speak to, and unfortunately I don't know the name of the specific individual, I would pick the person that is leading data initiatives at NASA. I'd absolutely love to get a better understanding about the way that they would see the world, and I mean they've done some very cool things with data themselves, but just that we're such a tiny speck in the grand scheme of the universe, and actually that would be fascinating conversation to have, I think.
That's quite an unusual one. I can imagine their volume of data is leaves the rest of us trailing in their wake somewhat. Cool. Look, Gareth, thank you again for joining us on a quite a warm evening for once, which is nice. A nice change from chucking down with rain outside. I do need to apologise. I did miss off at the start that you're also a Data IQ Top 100. I'm feeling somewhat left behind by all the guests we seem to be getting on that are part of the Data 100 alumni. So congratulations on reaching that this year. Along with Nick, we need to start checking them off and working our way through the list, I think, Nick. Yes, thank you for joining us, Gareth, tonight. I hope you found it an enjoyable podcast or podcast, and I think we'll have to get you booked in again in a few months' time and check in on how the industry is evolving.
Yeah, super. Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Nick. It's been fantastic to talk to you both this evening.